We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Feel like Kobe in the fourth quarter. This is the Dane Moore NBA podcast brought to you by the Genesis Company, coming at you Tuesday afternoon. It's March 14th. We got Wolves beat writer Jace Frederick here for a Tuesday rather than his typical Wednesday morning recap show, I guess. We'll be recapping the Atlanta game here, so I figured we'd take as much run time before the Celtics game on Wednesday night. Just hunting for clicks over here, Jace. Like Kyle Anderson was hunting for his for his dead rebound last night. Let's start with Kyle in that game. Triple-double. The Wolves won the 36 minutes Anderson played by 33 points, lost the 12 minutes he sat by 12. It was Anderson's second triple-double of the season. He's shooting 44% from three this on the year. I think this is a big stat, too. He's sixth best in the league and defensive estimated plus minus, which is, I think, the best like catch-all defensive metric we have out there, and has the best net rating on this team amongst the 10 players who have logged more than 500 minutes on the season. I think it's almost impossible to kind of summarize how impactful Anderson has been, because he does it in his own sort of bizarre way. But that impact to have on this team for less than the mid-level exception this summer goes down as one of the most impactful, crucial, I think, moves and developments of the season. Jace, what stood out most to you from Anderson's performance last night?
Well, there's a lot. I think it just in general, like, Kyle Anderson is somebody who will take advantage of what the other team gives you because he's just a smart player. And Atlanta was giving Minnesota a lot. And Anderson he sees the correct ways to manipulate. I mean, whether that's like, okay, we're all getting to the rim really easily now, I'm going to make a point to do that and make like the easy drop off pass, easy buckets. Let's make sure we're moving the ball here still. Let's not settle for the easy 18 footer when we can get something even better. Like, I think he's always just looking up for like making the smartest decision on the floor. And then defensively, you know, like you tweeted out that clip earlier of like him blocking Sadiq Bey's shot on Bey driving in, kind of then turning it into a post up, all in isolation against Kyle Anderson.
Kyle just like right slides him like a door.
Just yeah, stays right. Him. And yeah. Here's what I've settled on with Kyle Anderson is like, you don't want him on like the other team's best wing. Because whenever we've seen that wing, quick guard, whatever, like Kyle's going to get beat because if you're slow, you're slow, right? Like, and he's not like dysfunctionally slow, but there are certain matchups that are just not good for him. But as long as there's not like some big physical discrepancy in terms of like speed, he's a very good defender. So like, yeah, I don't really want him on like an elite guard, elite wing, but like somebody like Bey, who's just like an average wing, not like a great handle or anything, not super quick. Kyle Anderson will shut that guy down. He will shut down guys who are bigger than him. Like, he is just a fundamentally really good defensive player. And I think that's a huge advantage to have, particularly on a team where you don't need him to be like that shutdown wing stopper.
Yeah, no, I'm with that 100%. And, you know, not to already get to the talking about Cat coming back part of the podcast, but that is one of the most interesting parts, I think, of Cat coming back as it pertains to this season is what do you do with Kyle Anderson? And you, I mean, whether it's starting or close, probably more so closing games. I think we know Cat will, again, once he's off a minutes restriction or whatever, be in that starting spot that Kyle's in with, you know, Conley and McDaniels and Gobert. But he's made a hell of a case to close games for this team, even when Cat's back in the mix. And I think you really only have kind of two options in that scenario. Maybe a third by benching one of the centers, but you kind of have to have Mike Conley on the floor or Kyle Anderson on the floor in those situations. Maybe we're overplaying how big that is, because Kyle, even if he doesn't close games, will still get his 25, 30 minutes a night as the sixth man on this team. But I think going forward, you probably want to figure out if Kyle Anderson can be on the floor in that closing lineup with your main players. And the only way it seems you can really do that, or the most likely way you could seem to do that, is by taking Mike Conley off the floor in the clutch altogether. Do you have any sort of like ideas or thoughts on how they might handle that?
Well, I don't see how you take him off, particularly this season, just in that he's been their most effective player at the ends of games, specifically. Like, he's their best decision maker. Chris Finch hasn't hidden from that. He's like, that's like a safe hands player. Like, you feel good when the ball's in his hands and he's making the decisions. And like, that's true. And he's a good defensive player. So like, even situationally, there's never a reason to take him out. I'm with you that it could be Conley. Look, I don't know if they would shy away from like when things are in full swing, taking Gobert off the court for the final 2 minutes of games.
Yeah.
I don't know if they would. And then even
even just the Brooklyn game. And I know it was literally like one possession, last shot at the end of regulation where Naz Reid hits that three, but also,
and you need a three.
Yeah, that's true. But the end of overtime, they put Naz out there to set the screen rather than Gobert to be able to kind of play off of that. Again, that's not a closing. Naz didn't close the game like the last 5 minutes of the game over Gobert. But you've seen a little bit more that hints at the idea that Finch isn't like 100% committed to Rudy closing every single game. We've seen that over the second half of the season a good amount, even with Cat out.
Yeah, I agree with you. And then like situationally, on a possession to possession basis, if you ever did like an offense defense sub, you could always put Anderson in literally for anybody on either end of the court. Like, I honestly think you could put him in for Jaden McDaniels as an offense sub.
Sure.
Because McDaniels has struggled a little bit at his shot making in the last like minute of games, but just in general, like, Jaden in those situations is just kind of a stand in the corner shooter, and Kyle is more of like, if you want somebody in the action. So like an offensive possession with 10 seconds left, maybe you put Kyle in unless you want McDaniel's corner shooting there, but Anderson's been just as good in those situations. And then obviously defensively, you know, he can go in for Conley, he can go in for a Cat, literally anybody. I think you're right. Like, with 4 minutes left and you're going to go through 2 minutes, the next 2 minutes of games, you're not going to do offense defense subs. Like, who do you take off? Conley would make some sense, but like, it's another steady hand to have in the game. Like, I don't know. I think it makes too much sense, I think, to sit either Rudy, or maybe they want to, you know, as Cat has a minutes restriction, maybe you get Cat to those minutes restriction before there's 5 minutes left. Who knows? There's probably some gymnastics there, but like, Anderson has to be on the floor. I think anybody who's watched the Wolves this year would say like, Kyle Anderson has to be on the court when the game is being decided.
I'm just very curious how much, if at all, they make the Ant at the one, Jaden at the two, Kyle at the three, Cat at the four, Rudy at the five lineup part of their identity.
At that point, Kyle is going to often be the one.
Yes.
In a half court sets and whatnot.
And again, that would kind of be like clutch. We've seen Kyle, even when D'Lo was here, kind of be the clutch time point guard. So I've remained curious and optimistic about what that five man group could look like all season, pre-trade, post-trade. I don't know. But they've gone away from a lot of the point Ant, but it's something that makes a little bit of sense to me. I think it's only put like 13 minutes together all year.
Yeah. And there just weren't a lot of opportunities, frankly. But like, I think we've heard, how many times we heard Chris Finch kind of glow about Kyle Anderson, and he says the same things and they're all like the best things you can say about somebody. But to me, like, last night showed a ton in that Chris Finch, frankly, has often pulled guys like when they're close to reaching numbers.
Sure.
It's always scoring numbers, so that's a little bit different. You don't want guys just going and jacking up shots, and like, Kyle Anderson just needed one more rebound. But he frankly has pulled Cat when he's trying to get to scoring numbers. He's pulled Ant when Ant's trying to get to scoring numbers. I think like 50 at some point. And Ant said like, yeah, I want it to come more naturally anyway. But like Finch has pulled guys when they're going for those things. And then there's a rebound left for Anderson to get a second triple double of the year. And Finch left him out there. Like he put in other subs and put and like, left Kyle Anderson
really
in the
left
game.
Him out there. Like so obviously go get a 10-3 rebound.
Yeah, yeah. And
I don't
Finch
really care
even
about
said
that
in his post-game comments, you know. But like I just think that kind of shows the respect he has for Anderson and maybe like the admiration of like, yeah, you know what, you earned this. Go out and get it, you know.
Another thing at the beginning of that game, that maybe like first half that really stood out is it was another game where it was Ant and Jaden leading the way offensively. I think Jaden had like 17 in the first half, something. Ant was at 20. At some point, I remember looking, and they were clearly the two leading scorers, like way up there, which is encouraging again. Though it got derailed in the same way it kind of always does. Jaden gets in foul trouble, takes him out of in offensive rhythm. But broadly, just one of the, I don't know, call it the last 2 months, Jaden's offensive development has been such a boon for this team. And I thought it really set the tone in the Atlanta game where Atlanta chose right at the beginning, hey, we're going to put Trae Young on Jaden McDaniels. That's going to be the quote unquote hiding spot. And the Wolves went, that lasted about 4 minutes because Jaden had like 10 points in the first 4 minutes, all on Trae pretty much. And that's, again, as we think about playoffs, that's what I was kind of thinking about as that was going down. Like in a playoff matchup, that's where a team might try to hide a Trae Young-ish type of defender on their team against the Wolves. And Jaden has done a lot to make me believe that that is not a strategy you can kind of run for profit against this Wolves team.
No, and I think we've seen that quite a few times now. Like I remember those couple Dallas home games. Dallas tried to put like Kemba Walker on him. And every time that happened, Jaden McDaniels scored buckets, you know. And
it's the other guys, too, are like target. It's like Jaden's willingness to go, right? But like Kyle was looking for, like, it was a team effort to be like, this is our matchup right here. And that's kind of like the next level of, it's not just individual belief. It's like group belief, right?
Yeah. And frankly, like, you know, we always talk about when like Rudy has the mismatch and whatnot, it can be more difficult to get the ball into the interior in advantageous positions against matchups. Jaden's just swinging it over to him. Like that's an easy thing to do. So it's easy to attack that again and again. So yeah, I have confidence in Jaden McDaniels and Minnesota's ability to take advantage of anything like that. Now, it's not like in the playoffs there are many Trae Youngs or Kemba Walkers out there. Like they're usually not on playoff teams because they're not, you know, being such a one-way player, like usually you're not on a good team's rotation, even in Trae Young's case, like there's a reason Atlanta might not be in the playoffs. But like, it doesn't even have to be, I think, that obvious. I just think if Minnesota looks around and they're like, you know what, that's that team's worst defender. We are very confident Jaden McDaniels can score or create off that guy in a one-on-one situation. Let's go to it because they have a real fervent belief in McDaniels and what he can do offensively when given the opportunity.
Yeah. And I think I agree that these guys aren't Trae Young level defenders, but in the West, you know, you think about a Ja Morant if he's back, a Chris Paul, a Steph Curry.
Yeah, Morant is definitely somebody on that list.
Yeah, and like, and even if it's just for like saving energy for offense reasons, like I could kind of put that with on Chris Paul. Like I think those teams would go into a first round matchup against the Wolves, like trying to find a high, even maybe like Jamal Murray a little bit too, for Denver. And seems like a small thing, but if that isn't like a pivot that your matchup can go to in a 7-game series, even if it's to start or in the middle of the series, like if you can take advantage of that, that's like a leg up in the chess game of that. Not saying they're going to beat any of those teams necessarily in the playoffs, but that's one more chess move that they have. And yeah, it tells a story, I think, about the greater offensive growth about Jaden McDaniels this season, and just that he isn't, there aren't really problems when you talk about, you know, non-shooters on the floor of Rudy and, you know, Kyle's such a rare shooter that like Jaden being an offensive weapon as a catch and shoot shooter and being able to do some stuff off the dribble, I think has, I don't know if it's unlocked things, but it's made some of the problems that your personnel would have had been less egregious, I think, with this group this year. So I'm really big on that over these past few months for McDaniels.
Yeah, I just like in general, like if you're always like playing for ball movement in offense. I mean, you're trying to get the defense shifting. You're trying to, you know, just move the ball around the horn, kind of create some energy, some flow with it. But that only works if like guys are willing to take advantage of the situations then when they come. Like if the ball's swinging, and it gets to Jane McDaniels, like you better either be able to knock down that open shot or on a hard closeout attack, right, and get to the rim, create, get to the foul line, whatever. Otherwise, none of it works. Otherwise, you're like, well, even our good possessions don't generate anything good because we just pass it around and now there's 5 seconds left on the shot clock. Like McDaniels has become a guy where when the opportunity comes for him on the perimeter, whether it be a mismatch, whether it just be because the defense is rotating late out to him, like he will make them pay either via the shot or via, you know, attacking the closeouts. And like, that's huge. You need everybody who's playing on the perimeter to be able to do that. And even if Rudy's down low, we even see like in these lineups now, you know, when you have Mike Conley, Anthony Edwards, Kyle Anderson, Jaden McDaniels, like everybody is willing and capable of doing that. So when you do generate good offense, it generally leads to a good shot attempt.
Let's grab our first break here and then kind of come back and talk about the offense as a whole last night against Atlanta. Today's show is brought to you by Land and Lore. If you're a dude who is still washing your face using a bar of soap or nothing at all, this one is for you. It's time to stop living like a caveman and start taking care of yourself with Land and Lore, the only men's skincare brand that doesn't suck. Let's face it, if you don't look good, you don't feel good. And if you don't feel good, you're not going to do good. So start your day off like you care and use Land and Lore. Your partner will thank you. And we'll be proud of you for at least trying. Fans of the podcast have even more reason to start caring. Use promo code 20caveman at checkout on Amazon.com to get 20% off our face cleaner or moisturizer. And extra credit if you leave a review. That's 20caveman for 20% off Land and Lore at Amazon.com. These two products are proven to help you look your best. So upgrade your life with Land and Lore today. Your face and your partner will thank you for it. Today's show is brought to you by Hyacinth Restaurant in St. Paul. Hyacinth is one of my favorite restaurants in the cities and a place that I think is easy and comfortable to go to if you're looking for kind of an elevated dining experience that is still comfortable. That's been my experience when I've gone to Hyacinth with my friends and with my family. It's also a restaurant that is using all Minnesota products year-round, which I think makes it cool, whether it be for the menu items or the cocktails. They all kind of have like a wintry vibe to them. And I think that can be fun this time of year if you're looking to go out, whether it's for a fancy dinner or just something more casual on a random weeknight. You can make reservations there. Those are ideal. But if you're going in the wintertime and you're going on a weeknight, also walk-ins are more than normal there at Hyacinth. So if you haven't checked out Hyacinth, I challenge you to, you know, look at their website, check out their menu. They also have a Instagram page with a ton of their menu items on there. Again, you are going to go out to eat, and I would just recommend that you put Hyacinth at the top of your list if you're looking for a new place to check out in the city. So that's Hyacinth Restaurant in St. Paul. All right, we are back with Jace Frederick from the Pioneer Press. Jace, one thing that stood out to me in the Atlanta game as I was watching and kind of been tracking this over the course of the post D'Lo for Conley trade time, now 11 games, is the fact that the Wolves have had really good offensive games and really bad offensive games in this stretch. And I was looking at, you know, the three opponents now, including Atlanta, who the Wolves have clearly had their best offensive games against, some of their best offensive games of the season in terms of offensive rating, have been against Dallas, have been against Sacramento, and have been against Atlanta, who are all bottom 10 defenses on the season. And obviously, it's encouraging to take advantage of that. It makes you believe that this group, even without Kat, you know, can punish bad defenses. But then there's the other eight games where they've been below average offensively, and they've pretty much played middling to good defenses in the rest of those games. So I know this is pretty simple and distilled down, but it's like, it feels like this team can beat bad defenses without Kat, but to beat a good team, they absolutely need a little bit more of that scoring punch, something else to go to kind of, you know, get away from some of the power outages they've had offensively in these first 11 games. But against bad defenses, I don't know, the Wolves seem more than fine offensively since the trade deadline.
Yeah, I just think it's like, who is capable of making things difficult for Ant? Who's capable, whether that be through scheme or matchups, like who is able to make his life difficult, make it harder for him to get to the rim uninhibited, and just like make the reads a little bit more difficult for him. Like if you can make the read difficult, if you can make, you know, if you can't just be like, all right, I'm just going to take it and get to the rim and score or create, like when you can kind of shut him down, you can shut the whole thing down. And I'm not saying that in that nobody else can score. I'm saying that in like, he is kind of capable of shutting the offense down himself as well. When he gets frustrated, when he gets stagnant, when he decides, okay, I'm just going to, you know, iso ball into a three-pointer here, like everything kind of shuts down, where like Atlanta had nothing for him last night, and then he gets flowing easy, he can get stuff for himself and others, and everything just looks really easy for Minnesota, because they play good offense when Ant can kind of get going and go where he wants to go and do what he wants to do. So that's where I'm at. Like if you have the personnel or are just like frankly the schemes, which means usually you have people bought in to execute a scheme, you can give Minnesota troubles right now because Ant is still adjusting to different looks again and whatnot, and playing around different people. But when you can't, like Minnesota's going to roll because Ant's a great offensive player. And frankly, I think they have plenty of competent offensive people around him as well.
Yeah, I thought the specific to Ant, I thought the Brooklyn game kind of stood out as that. Like, I almost think about it as simple as, does the opponent have multiple players who can reasonably check Ant, right? In a one-on-one or just kind of straight up guarding him situation, right? Like the Wolves are going to, as they did against Atlanta, like they're going to try and prod for a switch to not have DeAndre Hunter be on Ant, right? And then you find yourself like Bogdanović on him or something, or maybe if it's even, you know, Trae Young, and then now Ant can go for profit. I thought against Brooklyn though, you know, they kind of got that stable of 6'7", 6'8" guys who, whatever, like go for switches. We don't really care. It'll go from Mikal Bridges to Dorian Finney-Smith, and we feel good about guarding. And I think the Wolves feel bad about that in those situations. That seems to be what, like, it's not like Ant can't beat those guys. We saw him beat those guys situationally plenty in the Brooklyn game, but it's like, at what rate does having multiple defenders slow Ant down enough so he's taking some of those quote unquote bad shots? It's that having the multiple defenders who are executing a scheme seems to be what really taps into Ant's bad habits of poor shot selection, right? If it's those multiple defenders, and again, think about playoff series, that's another thing I'm going to be, you know, looking at with whatever the matchup is there.
Good rotations, good help. Like, no, not a defender he can blow by. And then like in the Brooklyn game and whatnot, like I still think Ant's mind is always to the point of like, okay, I got the switch.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's go time. Even when it's like the switch didn't generate much for you. The matchup is still not awesome. You're not going to blow by this guy either. Mm-hmm. The defense is still stacked against you. Because you guys ran like one simple pick and roll action where half the people didn't have to move. And everybody's kind of zeroed in on shutting you down here. Get off the ball, yeah, or try something else, get into another action. Like Conley's even talked about this after the Brooklyn game of like, you've got to do some guard to guard screens. You've got to make them switch, you know, six times within a possession. So sure, you get that communication breakdown. I think of that Clippers game in the play-in, and it was a lot of D'Lo and Ant doing this stuff. But do you remember with like 5 minutes left, there was like a slip screen or something where they, like the Clippers screwed up the switch and Ant had like a free runway, mm-hmm, for a dunk in the middle of the defense. Like it takes doing a couple different things, sure, actions within a possession to create that one miscommunication. And now you have an easy bucket. But what Ant was doing too much against Brooklyn was like, all right, screen and roll up top, got a switch. It's like, okay, now you've got like Dorian Finney-Smith. This is, mm-hmm, not a great matchup for, yeah, you. And then he's just sizing you up and trying to score on them. And it's like, they're still loaded up against you. So you can't drive. Even if you drive in, there's help there. You're going to take a contested jumper. Nobody else is doing anything. It's really bad offense. And so like, that's what's going to be interesting about the Boston game is Boston can also do that.
Yes.
So like, it's a pretty big challenge, I think, for Ant and the coaching staff to get it into his head of like, look, if you get switched, if you get a switch and now it goes from Marcus Smart to Jaylen Brown, like that's not that great for us. You know, so like move, get off of it. Like let's at least try to get this defense shifting and moving, and maybe we can create a miscommunication that leads to a bucket. Don't just say, okay, now I've got Jason Tatum on me, I'm going to score on this guy one-on-one, because it's not going to be a great situation for Minnesota if he's consistently doing that throughout the night. Might score sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes it's going to not get anybody else involved, not make anybody else feel like they're in a rhythm of the game. And you're only going to score 40% of those possessions too.
If he's going to attack after he gets a screen, it's got to be fast, right? Like, attack as soon as that switch happens from Marcus Smart to Jaylen Brown. Or last night against Atlanta, where they didn't have the second defender, there was a few times where it's like, there was that. I remember one specifically, it was like a guard-to-guard screen with J-Mac and Ant. And there was like a half second where whoever was guarding J-Mac, I don't remember, like switched on to Ant and then tried to like peel back so DeAndre Hunter was there. And they did that. Like Ant didn't go quick enough before DeAndre Hunter got back. And then that drive on DeAndre Hunter is X amount times harder than it is before. It's like, it's the speed in which, like, you know, there's a time and a place for the, you know, the yank, yank, yank isolation sort of thing. But as much as you can minimize that as possible and just go as soon for Ant, as soon as he gets any switch, that just feels like it's going to, you know, it's going to up the efficiency. And that's just a product of, you know, reading the game better and faster over time. One other thing I randomly put in our outline today, maybe just because I think this might be like last night might have been the last time that Luka Garza plays this season. Right. Like I mean this kind of like in all seriousness, like we've seen some pretty good stuff from Luka Garza this year, offensively in terms of what he's been able to do. And I'm curious what your thoughts are on him being a piece with this team beyond this season. Is he the type of guy that seems worthwhile to give one of those Gupta special contracts to, where it's, you know, maybe multiple years at the minimum or something like that, somewhat non-guaranteed? I think like on the surface, we'd be like, yeah, he's been good in the spots that he's gotten. This team will need a third center if Naz Reid leaves. But is that the archetype of third center do you want? If it's Kat and Rudy next year as your one and two centers, your third center is going to be needed because those guys are going to get in foul trouble situationally. And I think it's a question of, do you want a more offensive or defensive minded third center on this team this year? Obviously it's been far more offensive minded with Naz taking that role this year, but what are just your, I guess, quickish thoughts on Luka Garza making sense here or not, big picture for the Wolves?
I think I would go with like a Garza if Naz Reid is gone, because I've kind of gone into the headspace of like, look, if you're looking for somebody who wants to be a third center in the NBA and that guy is a quote unquote defensive minded center, they're probably just not very good. like we see a lot of like, it's not like that defensive minded quote unquote center is going to slow down any good offensive center. There's a reason. If they could do that, they wouldn't be a third center on an NBA team. Like, so many of these guys were like, oh, that's a defensive player. They're really big, really slow. If they get put in any action, like pick and roll, it's terrible. It leads to a bunch of really open stuff from the guard. Like, I will just, when it comes to like a third center, I will take somebody who can come be productive. And an offensive player, they might give up some easy buckets. They're going to make some of that back on the offensive end. Mm-hmm. It leads you much closer to a net zero than some of these defensive guys who probably, a lot of times it's not going great defensively and you know they're giving you nothing and probably clogging stuff up on the offensive end. So give me Luka Garza, who I have seen consistently now, at least consistently enough, can be a productive player, because who else is that signing for that kind of deal and that kind of depth piece do you know can be productive? So that's why I don't worry too much about like the skill set. I'm like, take the productive player and the guy who you know can come in on a spot's notice, like as is going to be the case and as Luka has shown, and play relatively well. Of course, he's got downside. Anybody in that role is going to have downside. I like Luka's upside more than I'd like a lot of guys you're going to find in that position.
I'm with that. I'll just make the devil's advocate argument, which I look to Utah and what they did over those kind of like the second half of the 8 years that Gobert was there. They really decided to focus on duplicating Rudy in those 15 minutes a game that he didn't play the Hassan Whitesides. That's why they drafted Azubuike. Like they decided that having that backup, again, this is like more second center than third center, but like they found a lot of value. And part of that was trying to play the same scheme the whole time, right? Rather than the toggle we talk about all the time, which, like, they prefer to play Luka Garza up in coverage, just like they do Naz. Like, Rudy's the only center they really rely on consistently to play and drop coverage. I'm with you in the idea that I don't think you're going to get more production for a minimum player than you would from Luka Garza, despite his faults. But I do wonder if in an alternate reality, you know, Rudy Gobert had a calf strain for 50 games this season, and we were looking, and the center group, the same thing happened, right? Except it's cap for Rudy. And now you just have exclusively offensive centers. What does that do for this team? It certainly changed. I mean, if you lose Rudy at all, it changes your identity completely. But I would be very... Back to last year's team. But with the flaw, like with maybe some other flaws in there as well. And, you know, a season's probably lost one way or the other if you lose one of your best players for 50 games. But, you know, what if Rudy misses 12 games next year? I would expect that, you know. Are you cool with Kat and Luka Garza, again, if Nasri lead, or even if Nasri is there, right? Like, just having 48 minutes of offensive centers. That's the only real case I can make against Garza at this point. Though I don't know. He's struck me as somebody that the organization has been very into the whole season. And if they didn't have the roster crunch they do in terms of roster positions, I would have thought they would have given him an NBA contract here to close the season.
Yeah, I agree. And like I said with you, like, I totally understand the idea of, like, well, let's get a defensive center, but I just stand by the notion of, like, or the thought of, if this is a player who's going to be a third center, then they're actually probably not a good defensive center. Yeah. Like, I don't know, do you classify Moses Brown as a defensive center? Because
it would honestly be that.
He maybe fits that mold, and guess what? He's getting cut everywhere he goes because he stinks at basketball. Like, that's the truth. Like, you would watch him be like, you can't play this guy. Yeah. And they'd be like, well, he fits more of the defensive mold. It's like, but he stinks, mm-hmm. you know, like, and that, and I think that's what, like, teams probably look at, like, Moses Brown, and they're like, let's, you know, he's got length. He could be good defensively. And then they play him and they're like, no,
right.
Nope. This guy gets exposed defensively and gives us nothing offensively. So it's tough.
No, that actually, Moses Brown is the perfect comp, which is the perfect way to end our way too deep of a dive portion of today's episode. Let's grab one more break and wrap this up with Chase Frederick. Today's show is sponsored by Shady Rays. Kick off the new year with new gear built to last. Our friends at Shady Rays have you covered from the sun to the slopes, with premium polarized shades, customizable snow goggles, and much more. Shade Rays is an independent sunglasses company that offers a world-class product that's just as good as any expensive pair we've worn, durable frames, and extremely clear optics for outdoor adventures. It's not all. Shady Rays offers the most insane protection in all of eyewear. Every pair of sunglasses is backed by lost and broken replacements. If you lose or break your pair, even on day one, they told us they will send you a brand new pair, no questions asked. Wear your Shady Rays with confidence because they have your back after you purchase. With Shady Rays, you can look good and feel good. To date, they have donated over 20 million meals to fight hunger with Feeding America. If you don't love them, exchange for a new pair or return them for free within 30 days. There's no risk when you shop with Shady Rays. Their team always has your back. And exclusively for our listeners, Shady Rays is giving out their best deal of the new year. Go to ShadyRays.com, use promo code DaneMoore for 50% off 2+ pairs of polarized sunglasses. Try for yourself the shades rated 5 stars by over 20,000 people.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events. The list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
All right, back again with Jace Frederick for one final segment. Jace, overall, a really good game for the Wolves and what they were able to do. I thought there were three things that I noticed in the game that were slightly concerning and have been issues for this team for the entirety of the season. I saw bad transition defense in that game, as bad as it's been recently. Getting hurt on the offensive glass. I think Atlanta had 18 offensive rebounds. And then it was they kind of did the thing where they got a 20-point lead and extended it, but then it drops back to 13. Sort of that inability to just end an opponent. Those are the three things that stood out to me from that game that have been season-long issues for this team. So, pick your poison: transition defense, offensive rebounds, or inability to close games. Which one of those stands out to you?
I mean, the inability to close games one. I feel like maybe you're nitpicking a little bit there. Like, it got to 13.
I know. I actually tweeted out, like, I was like, hey, they're actually like putting this team away, because it went from like 20 at halftime to 27 or something when I tweeted it out. And then sure enough, like, they cut it down to like 15, and everyone's like, shut up, Dane.
Yeah, it went to 28 from 28 to 13. Yeah. I understand that. But I think that does kind of fall a little bit into like the other teams are going to make a little push. But like, and then they put the starters back in and they closed the door. So if anything, like, it was kind of the reserves didn't quite get the job done there. But, you know, sure enough, what was it that totally ended all Atlanta momentum? But a Kyle Anderson, you know, take to the hoop and one. Yeah. Yeah, so I didn't look too much on that one, but I do think that's still a big issue. Like, this team closing games, no matter what, like, even if last night isn't a prime example, I think we all think that still exists in a very big way. Probably the offensive rebounding. Well, I don't know. I'm with you on both. I think the transition defense and the offensive rebounding. I think the transition defense, the biggest thing is, like, when Cat comes back, if he does here, like, that was terrible at the start of the season. Like, it was, that's why they got trounced by bad teams who just decided, well, let's just run. And I'm not sure that that's going to look any different when Cat comes back. So that's going to be something to keep a close eye on. But the offensive rebounding, pretty consistent. It's what knocked them out last year, so it's pretty easy to point at that and be like, oh, that's a big one. Especially if you're going to hang your head on defense, you can't give up easy buckets in any way. That's too simple of one to give away for a team that should probably try to win playoff games like 104-96.
I was looking up the transition defense numbers, and they're giving up about the same amount of points per possession in transition defense now in the injured Cat time as they were when Cat and Rudy were out there, which made me go initially like, oh, you know, that's interesting. And then I kind of thought about it. I'm like, points per possession allowed in transition defense isn't the most important factor here. It's frequency.
Yeah.
And the frequency with which opponents have gotten out in transition has dropped back a lot since the Cat issue. So, you know, I think that will be an issue to some extent again, if and when Cat is back. I felt like they'd made some real strides in that over the last 40, 50 games or whatever. And last night just kind of stood out to me in a way that I was like, okay, it's not always 100% there's two bigs on the floor thing. It's just this team, when they get sloppy and a little bit lazy, that's when teams get out and transition against them. And if and when that happens, it can really be a killer for this team. But I think offensive rebounding is the bigger issue as well.
I would say, like, the transition thing, and this is just last night specifically, I don't even fault the Wolves for this, but when Atlanta plays the way Atlanta played, it does give you a little bit of like a rec league vibe. And Minnesota certainly played above that level, but when your opponent is constantly playing like with that level of effort and whatnot, and you're building a lead on them because they're doing that, I think it can be easy to just like, it's hard to be locked in every single possession and focus on the right things every single possession when the other team is like not focused on anything the entire game. So like some of those I think are like, okay, you want it to be tight all the time, but I give a little forgiveness in games like that. Like Atlanta, I don't know what Atlanta was doing. Like there were possessions where the Hawks would like miss a deep three and then whoever shot that three should clearly be running back with the guy who was guarding them. But instead then like they're coming up to like press up on whoever got the rebound. And then it just creates an even simpler throw ahead for like a layup. I had no idea what the Hawks were doing. If I was Quinn Snyder, I'd be like, why did I do this? Like, this is really stupid. But I don't know. We'll see what he makes of that team eventually, if he can change anything about them. But that team, you see why, like you look at the roster, it's like pretty talented. You watch it play, it's like pretty bad. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense why they are now back again below 500.
It did, to do a little bit more on the offensive rebounding thing, like when teams do have, when they can go like 48 minutes with a really strong offensive rebounding big out there, that should concern Wolves fans as Atlanta could last night, Capella to Okongwu. I mean, the Wolves,
Okongwu dominated
that. Oh, I mean,
he was the reason for the rally or the fourth quarter. He dominated that stretch of the game.
It was the Brandon Clark thing from the playoffs. Like right. that was the game that was most similar to like game six or whatever it was. And that should be a concern with this team. The Rudy Gobert addition has not absolved the Wolves at all from their terrible defensive rebounding issues. They are grabbing 71% of opponent misses this season. Last year, it was better. They grabbed 72% of opponent misses. And last year, they were tied for the worst defensive rebounding team in the NBA. So that has to be on your mind. Again, thinking about playoff opponents as we go forward. You know, I've said for a few weeks now that I think Sacramento, of those kind of teams, would be probably the best matchup for the Wolves. Not saying I would pick the Wolves over the Kings, but I think that'd be the best matchup. Though Sabonis as an offensive rebounder in that series would really concern me in the Okongwu, Brandon Clark type of mold. I think he would really hurt the Wolves with his ability to get on the offensive glass. So that's another area you hope Cat helps in. But it has been a season-long issue for this team that they have been one of the worst defensive rebounding teams in the NBA.
Yeah, and I don't know. It would take a different mindset from Cat because early in the season, like, Cat just wasn't in the paint. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and I do think that's something that he, you know, talking about people talked things that he can probably see. I think, like, having to be more of himself and do the things that he does well. That factors in. Like, I think he'll probably watch, like, he's probably watched a lot of the Wolves games and thought, like, okay, I need to be more active in there, the defensive glass. I see the way that we get beat up there. Like, I think it was just difficult for him to find a balance early in the season of, like, Rudy's down there, I shouldn't be down there. Mm-hmm. But I think I have a feeling that that's one of those things where he's like, I need to help out on the glass when I get back. Mm-hmm. Rudy has been doing it by himself here for, you know, all these games. I need to come in and do that. That's one area where I do think he would provide a boost, logically, yeah, as you would think he would.
Last thing, Jace, I didn't really tell you we're going to do this, but I was kind of...
here we go.
I was looking at... I think a lot of Wolves fans will be watching or following Lakers-Pelicans tonight, as that's an important game in the standings. Wolves fans, the masochistic part of them, I think, finds themselves watching a lot of Utah Jazz and LA Lakers games. I think there's extra reason to watch the Lakers now due to playoff reasons. So I just looked at D'Lo Vando and Beasley's prize picks, what their things are set at. I'm just going to rip through this with you, okay? D'Lo, 20.5 points against the Pelicans, more or less than that.
More than. He's been pretty aggressive offensively, given their current lineup situation.
Seven assists, two made free throws, 2.5 turnovers. Any of those look good?
Over on the turnovers, 7 sounds about right for the assists.
Yeah, stay away maybe there.
Yeah.
I like more than 2 made free throws.
Well, yeah, I just remember from all my memories of him playing is he'll easily get to the line that many times.
Yeah, you would think so there. Vando, 7.5 points, 7.5 rebounds. I guess I would say I like the rebounding one more there. What about you?
I do too. I don't like Vando over-unders on anything because there are games where he'll randomly play like 18 minutes. So it's tough to put anything on him.
Mm-hmm. Then Malik Beasley, 11.5 points. That was the only one he had on there was 11.5 points for Beasley.
Yeah, I guess I'll go over, but he's been ice cold again lately. It's been this. We saw this in Minnesota all the time, way up, way down. And right now he's in the middle of the shooting slump. Like they lost that Knicks game because Beasley couldn't hit anything and Troy Brown especially couldn't hit anything. Beasley is just in one of those stretches. Like
that's how
you
goes.
Look at the overall number at the end of the year and it's like good, but he's either going to win games for you or he's going to lose games for you. And right now he's losing them. It's like he lost them that game on Sunday or Saturday, whatever Saturday, it was. Yeah. It was not good. And so right now I think it's tough to predict him coming out of a shooting slump on any given night. So I guess I'll go under that one.
All right. Well, if you are all, I think everybody's kind of maybe watching more of the NBA now night to night with all these playoff seeding.
I mean, every game matters. So yeah, like it just feels more interesting than it does in December.
Exactly. It's worth tuning in if you're just a Wolves fan to some of these other games and to like, get to see some of these teams that they might play in the play-in or a playoff series. So if
who do you think, go ahead. I think this is probably pretty logical, but Pelicans, Lakers, like, do you think should Wolves fans automatically be rooting for the Pelicans tonight in your mind?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd rather get the Pelicans in a play-in. I guess it would be the play-in is what it would be there. I mean, it's just,
and it's who's more likely to contend with you probably for like eight. You know, seven or eight. Who's more likely to bump you back to nine or to the 9-10 game? Probably the rest of the way here versus who you're going to play against. Mm-hmm. Like, who's more likely to go on a run? I think to maybe pass you in the standings
to push you down. That you're right. It's that, and I would say the Lakers, even with LeBron looming. But my too specific to the play-in setup is like, if I'm the Wolves, I do not want to get the Lakers or the Clippers in like the 7-8 matchup in the play-in. I know they beat the Clippers last season, but it's a different calculation with Paul George and Kawhi in the mix there. And what is the Wolves' ability? The Wolves are a solid, good defensive team. Multiple weapons, multiple like high level scoring weapons really scares me in this, outside of the fact that I just assume that, LeBron and Kawhi are going to be extra turned up, to be able to play in that there. So again, just to finish the Prize Picks thing, if you guys do want to check that out and make some Prize Picks here, whether it be this Tuesday night or for Wolves games going forward, prizepicks.com, Prize Picks app, promo code Dane gets you a $100 sign up bonus. Jason and I will keep tracking where the Wolves go and where the standings around them move. It changes every day. But Jace, I'll see you next tomorrow, Wednesday, for Wolves Celtics at Target Center, which that would be a hell of a win. I would be.
It's crazy because the Celtics are not playing well. They just lost to Houston, and like they played everybody, and they lost to Houston last night in Houston, which to me thinks like they're more likely to lock in against Minnesota. Right. But at the same time, like I just don't think they have it right now. It's kind of like it's odd because Boston is still very much playing for things. Like they are now at in like a tussle with Philly for the two seed. They've locked themselves into that position. Where like Denver is playing for nothing. They've secured the one. I totally forgive their slope. And they have time to figure it out. But Boston, I don't get it. I don't understand it. Like last night they had their guys and outside of Robert Williams and they just lost to Houston. So that'll be interesting to see if we get a fired up Celtics or if we get a team that just kind of continues this little downturn of play here.
It's kind of like the Wolves when they get a 20-point lead. Like this Celtics team for like at least when I've tuned into them, like they have had a propensity to take their foot off the gas, and some of that.
Yeah, people have called it like prevent offense. I've seen with the Celtics in games. Like, right. Oh, here they go. They're going to the hold the ball offense with 7 minutes to go.
But they have been doing it for like a month now. They've been problematic for a month now. So it is we always kind of do the thing, and you look at the. You look at the standing, who are the Wolves playing? You look at where they are in the standing so as to kind of grade what the level of the opponent is. I think this year, as much as any, it's really struck me that like teams are doing this up and down sort of thing. And it's a lot of it has to do with when you catch a team. That's why we talk all the time about the Wolves having lost to bad teams. They've lost to middling teams a lot that have been playing well in the week ahead of playing the Wolves. And I just think in the NBA right now, you got to look at what a team has been recently. That seems to be, you know, so much more telling. And to that end, this is a good time to catch Boston, though I'm kind of with you too. They just lost to Houston. That I'm sure practice today or whatever. It's like, we got to tighten the screws, and we're going to have a hungry team against Minnesota on Wednesday too to, you know, to be able to play us. Like, we got to play our game so as to not be able to. They want that too. And you don't
want to go up against Philly with, you know,
not at home. Like, if they're the three,
exactly.
Then
that's what I'm saying. You're going to get Philly either way. But you want home court advantage in that series. And frankly, like, I think I'd rather have the two than the three for the first round matchup, though that could be Miami. But anyway,
I think if you're them, you like kind of learned like about that last year too.
Not like you just went into a, you know, intense 7-game Eastern Conference final series that came down to the last shot against Miami last year.
Okay, that's a good point. Jace is only a bigger Jimmy Butler stan than he is a Jordan McLaughlin ties. How would you rank those?
Jimmy's having a tremendous season, by the way. I don't know if everybody's noticing that. He's been like phenomenal this season.
He has. And Tyus has been awesome recently too. He just does that.
This is kind of a part-time Tyus Jones podcast. even like last year's playoffs, we like cut back in to do a podcast when they were playing the Warriors and Tyus was playing and playing well. Yeah, that's going to be really interesting. They won three in a row now with Tyus, and like, you know, and not to dive too deep into the John Morant stuff, but just like some of the reportings out there, like Marcus Spears is like, I think John Morant might not come back this year. Like, Tyus Jones then is already a worthwhile investment for what Memphis put into him this offseason to keep him. Because they can still, like, I don't know, they won't be the scariest two or three seed, certainly, because literally, like, their best player isn't on the team, but like, they're still a very good team with Tyus Jones at the helm. And wouldn't be surprised if they still, you know, win a first round matchup that people just assume they'll lose.
I'm with that completely. Like, I obviously Memphis is worse without John Morant and Brandon Clark, like, for sure.
The Brandon Clark thing is huge, but like, that's depth that they need as well.
I think people are like really putting a fork in Memphis, and if there's no jaw, like, you put a fork in them in terms of being a contender.
In title hopes.
Yeah. But first round series, like, even without jaw and even without Clark, like, Memphis is the best defense in the league this year. Like, and that's been with plenty of players in and out.
And taking jaw out is the biggest guy you can target.
Great point. Yeah. So I don't know. That Memphis team is very well coached. I hate when Wolves players tell us, like, next man up mentality when someone's down. But I don't remember a team in recent history that actually executes a next man up like mentality better than Memphis has for multiple seasons now. It was the same thing last year when John missed 22 games or whatever it was, and they went 20-2 or something like that. So I still think, I mean, with all the, it's like Denver and every other team in the West, you got holes to poke in it. And everybody seems really eager to poke the Memphis one because it's that top end talent. But there, you can do the same thing with Phoenix. We can go down the line, Sacramento and their defense. Like, all these teams in the West are imperfect, very imperfect. And what should make for a really fun playoffs in that, like, I think a lot of the first, second round series could go a lot of different ways, even with the Wolves. But it's, I'm not putting a fork in Memphis for this season. At all. But all right,
Tyus is probably better than he's been in any other year as well. Like, offensively, he is a much better player. He gets better and better every year.
He's the classic add a small thing every year. I mean, he's such a different player than he was in Minnesota. Like, it looks like the same, like, discount Chris Paul or whatever, but he's in his prime. I mean, Tyus is in his prime now. When we had Tyus in Minnesota, he was a skinny 21-year-old, you know. He's a starting caliber point guard, right? Like, I don't know if we made list of.
Oh, he's like, easily in the top 30 NBA point guards. Like,
well, I don't think pushback for you.
That's what I'm saying, though. Like, I think it's higher than that. Like, I don't think it's top. I don't think you're like, yeah, he's probably in the top 30. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's pretty easy to say he's higher than that. You have to at least get up to like 25, 22 for me to be like, okay, let's start making a list. Like, I don't have to even think about top 30.
Right. No, yeah, he's. And he's shown it again for two seasons. But anyways, we'll keep tracking things. Jace, appreciate you doing it. I will be back, I believe, on Thursday at some point with Britt to talk about that Boston game, and we'll keep going. I'm heading to Chicago for the game on Friday against the Bulls. And we'll see. At some point, I think Carl has to come back. And if and when that does happen, we'll talk about it. He's Jace Frederick. Follow him on Twitter at Jace Frederick. Read him at the Pioneer Press. I'm Dane at Dane Moore MBA. Until Thursday with Britt. Peace out. How I'm feeling, man, I hope it never stop, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah, yeah. Don't let standards ever bring you down, yeah. Hope you dancing like no.